Joining us on the WBGO Journal is Dee Dee Bridgewater at the Blue Note in New York City. No stranger to our airwaves, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
So you're touring for this new album, Memphis, Yes, I'm Ready.
Yes.
And to my understanding, this project was a years-long endeavor.
Well, yeah, from the time that I decided that this was the direction that I wanted to go in, to going and meeting with Kirk Whalum, who co-produced the album with me. It's been a beautiful journey because it was also about me going back home to Memphis. I was born there, but my family left when I was 3 and a half. It was also kind of the culmination of doing a lot of research on my father and what the life was like, what our life was like when we lived there, and finding the house that my parents lived in when I was born, the first house I lived in, and finding out that it was just like 4 blocks from Royal Studios, that my father was friends with Willie Mitchell, and they played in some of the same bands together. Willie Mitchell, of course, owned Royal Studios, and Royal just celebrated its 60th anniversary on the 18th, and I was part of that, and very, very proud to be a part of that history and that part of Black music.
It's interesting you say you did the research, yeah, going back to Memphis.
Yeah.
Why now?
Well, up until 2014 when I decided, well, I'd always thought about going back to Memphis. I just never had the time. And I'd been thinking about it actually at the same time that I thought about trying to find my African ancestry. And I thought that in order for me to do things correctly, I needed to, and chronologically, I needed to find my ancestry first, and then I could turn my attention to where I was born and how, you know, my life was when I was a little girl and why the South has always called me, why I always feel comfortable in the South. So it was part of, actually, it was going to be a trilogy of albums, but I'm stopping with Memphis. I was going to do Detroit after that, but Motown has been so warmed over.
And in regards to Memphis, 13 tracks, what was it like selecting these tracks?
Well, you know what? I had originally about 30 songs, you know, that I had listened to over my teenage years on WDIA, which is a radio station that I was able to catch when I was growing up in Flint, Michigan. And WDIA is a Memphis-based radio station. And then I found out just 2 years ago that my father was a DJ on WDIA when he and my mother had first moved there in 1949. But what I had some numbers that I absolutely had to do. Wait a minute, let me rephrase that. I had a number, and that's Given Up. And so I kind of took that Gladys Knight and the Pips hit and built around it and tried to pick out of these 30 songs that would go with the flow of the musical idea that I had for Given Up.
Given up is hard to do when you really love someone. Giving up is hard to do when you still depend upon his
word. When I listen to the album, is a lot of the songs on the album have that kind of gospel tinge to them and a kind of bluesy tinge to them.
Looking at the album cover, is that you?
That's me. It was a picture that my mother had in a big giant book that was kind of like a photo album book, but it was about maybe 6 inches deep. It was a big box shaped like a book. And so that was one of the pictures that I was able to salvage. My mother died from complications of vascular dementia. And at the early stages of her dementia, she threw all of those pictures, all of our family pictures out. So that was one that I had salvaged, and I decided that it was folded up. So the creases that are on the cover are the actual creases in the original photo. And I was about 2.5 years old, and my mother told me I was standing on the stage of the Orpheum Theater for a concert of Dinah Washington. My father, in the summer months, when he wasn't teaching at Manassas High School, would play in different the bands of different artists when they would come to Memphis. So that's little me.
You had a special guest drop in on you while you were recording this album.
Carla Thomas, yes. And it was just after I'd said a prayer asking God to give me a sign. I said, I need a sign, a clear sign, an undeniable sign that I'm on the right path here with this departure from doing jazz music. And I had just finished mixing her one of her big hits, Baby, and went back into the booth to play it again and was told she was at the front door. And then she came back, and so we played it for her, and she loved it.
Baby, oh baby, I love to call you baby. Baby, oh baby, I love for you to call me baby. When you squeeze me real tight, you know you make wrong things right. And I can't stop loving you, and I won't stop calling you baby. Oh baby, you look so good.
And then she sat with us for about an hour and just told me stories about my dad and about when I was a little girl and how she would take care of me at rehearsals when my father would play in her father's band, Rufus Thomas. And it was just awesome. It was really awesome. And, you know, that she said she had been following my career, and she says, yep, a lot of people may not know you from Memphis, but I do. And I was like, okay, yes.
Making this kind of album, like you had said, kind of stepping away from jazz, difficult, not so difficult, fun, not so fun? Challenging?
It was, honestly, and it was a dream come true. It's been a closet dream of mine to sing this music, and I always wanted to do blues, and my mother made me promise that I would not do the blues. And it's maybe selfish because she was transitioning, and so I knew she couldn't fuss at me. I was, you know, I was my mother's daughter until my mother left this earth. You know, I always wanted to please my mama. And so, was it difficult? I was very surprised it was not difficult at all. I was really worried that my voice from singing jazz for so long was going to have any authenticity to it, singing blues music and soul music. And I remember going into the studio to cut the first song, and I can't remember which one it was, but my oldest daughter is my manager, Talani Bridgewater Kowalski, and she was there. And I said, Talani, I don't know if I can do this music. I just don't know if I can do it. She says, Mom, just go in there and sing. Just sing. She gave me a little push, and it was just, it was so wonderful. I feel so, what's the word? I just feel buoyed when I sing this music. I feel uplifted when I sing this music. I can feel the healing powers of this music on my soul. So I've been singing the repertoire from the album now since April, and I just feel happier with every day and more positive with every day. And it's a beautiful experience to share this music with other people from Memphis who know this music well, and to get they're okay, that I'm doing all right.
2017's been a pretty good year for you. You've got a new record you always wanted to make, yeah. And earlier this year, NEA Jazzmaster, yes. Right? What is that like?
It's very strange. You know, I'm just a working woman. I always call myself, I'm a mom who works. And it just so happens that, you know, what I do is make music, and I've been very blessed to do that. But I've always just thought about what I'm doing. I've never, you know, and that it's going to appeal to the public, because it is the public that keeps me alive. And if it's going to appeal to the public, if I'm going to have a public with whatever new project I come out with, then I feel okay. You know, I try to model myself after Miles Davis. Miles was my hero in terms of always reinventing himself and always daring to do something new and different. And I thought as a singer, I said, you know, we should be able to do that too. So I'm proud that I've established myself as, you know, the jazz singer who is forever changing and reinventing herself. And now people come to expect that. So to have the National Endowment for the Arts look at my full career and deem it worthy of being called a jazz master for me was tremendous, absolutely tremendous, and humbling and gratifying, you know, all kinds of emotions at the same time.
And next month, another prestigious honor is being bestowed yes. upon you, right, by the ASCAP Foundation?
Yes.
How did that come about?
I don't know.
You work with Goodwill.
I work with a leg of the United Nations called the Food and Agriculture Organization, and I've been with them since 1999. Prior to that, I worked with UNESCO with their political refugees program, and that was while I was living in France, in Paris, and I worked with them for 8 years. I've worked with a lot of different organizations in France, organizations to help protect the rights of women and children against abuse, social rights, the SOS Racism I worked with for a number of years, another organization for children with disabilities. I think I've just been aware of the importance of people who have some kind of notoriety, lending their names, their faces, their works to help better other people's lives. And that's always been something very important to me, because we're just one big, we're a giant family. We're a human family. We are all human beings, and there are many people who need help. So if I can help in a little way, you know, then I feel like I've done something good.
It amazes me that you find the time being a touring, recording artist.
I really enjoyed being made one of the first four Goodwill ambassadors for the Food and Agriculture Organization, because the other three inductees were Miriam Makeba, Gina Lola Brigida, and the Nobel Prize winning Dr. Ruth Levy Montalcini, who won for her research into women's cancers. And so to be with those three women, to embark on trying to bring more notice to this cooperative program that had been founded by the original general director of the FAO was huge. It was absolutely huge, you know. But Dr. Jacques Diouf, who was the general director then, said that he had been watching all of the different organizations that I had worked with, and he was really impressed with that, and that's why he asked me to be involved.
Do you have any particular story?
There had been a big scandal in France about donations going to an organization to raise money for cancer research had been pilfered by the people that had were getting the money. So I said to him, I said, you know, Mr. Diouf, in order for me to really be a part of this, I have to go on, they call them missions. I said, I need to go on a mission with you. I need to see these cooperatives that you've got going. I need to see how this is working so I can really speak about it. So he took me, and we visited, we went to Senegal, and we visited 22 villages in 3 days. But I saw the pride of these villagers in becoming self-sufficient through this female cooperative program that he started, and then I was hooked.
Have you begun to think about what's next for you musically?
I hate to talk about what I want to do, because as soon as I put it out there, something happens and then I don't get it done. It's going to involve writing and trying to collaborate with some other writers to come up with original material, but of what genre, I ain't saying. I'm not saying.
Dee Dee, thanks for joining us on the WBGO Journal.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. I enjoyed it. Hey, all my WBGO family, I miss you guys. Mwah.
Love you just.